Welcome to Money Matters Podcast, where we strive to educate and empower you to make smart choices with your money. We believe people don't typically plan to fail. They simply fail to plan. Here are your hosts, Mike and Matt.
Welcome to Money Matters. I'm Mike Herman. With me today is my co-host, Matt Cloutier. Matt, how are you?
Hello, doing good. How about you, Mike?
What do you think about our 90-degree to 34-degree temperature swing?
Snowy weather, yeah. It's a big change.
It's crazy outside. This year has been definitely weird, and September's just adding on top of it, right?
But yeah, that's it.
I guess that's Mother Nature. They always say in Colorado, stick around an hour, the weather will change, right?
Expect the unexpected.
If you've been here long enough. So, well, I want to welcome our listeners to today's podcast, Money Matters Podcast. Today, we're going to be joined by a special guest, Hunter Wyckoff, who works primarily in the insurance planning area of our firm. With that, for those of you that are listening today, we've had a couple prior podcasts. The last one we had, hopefully, if you've listened to it, if you haven't, we encourage you to listen to it. It was on the cash flow and budgeting.
Debt
issues.
Yeah.
Yep. So more of the basic foundation planning is what we're doing on these first four or five podcasts. So today we're, you know, I think the big piece about risk management is, I think, Matt, you'll agree that a lot of people talk about it as maybe your homeowners and auto insurance, right? You're mandated by mortgage companies to have the house insurance. You're mandated by the state to have auto insurance.
State, but yes.
A lot deeper than that, would you agree?
Sure is, yeah. There's a lot of different layers to insurance.
Yep. I think when we talk about risk management, it would be nice if everybody could self-insure every aspect of their life today, right? Their death, their something happened if they became disabled, an extensive medical accident, sickness. But unfortunately, that just has happened today, which is why insurance companies are here, right?
That's it. Yep.
It's about leveraging, right? It's about delegating your risk to somebody else who can afford plans, right?
OPM, other people's money.
Exactly. Using other people's money today. So that's exactly right. So I think when people talk about that, we're going to dig in, but not deeply today into each, you know, each product that's available there to help you protect against these unknown risks that are out there today, right? Just as general.
More of an overview.
Down after this podcast, our next podcast, we're going to break each one of these different plans into separate podcasts so people can have a better understanding of what they are, because we can't talk about that all today. Our podcasts go for an hour. We don't want to do that. Most people wouldn't listen to us for an hour. We're not that great, right? So Hunter Wyckoff, Hunter, you've been in the insurance business for going on about a year and a half now. You've been very successful at the risk management piece, been very successful interacting with clients and explaining to them why they need to have this protection. You know, I think most advisors and planners today, Hunter, will tell you that risk management, really the integral insurance piece, is probably one of the more critical pieces of their family's foundation planning. But yet, I think as we find out, Matt, when people come into our office, and Hunter, you'll probably agree that it's probably, unfortunately, one of the areas that's not addressed.
Least addressed, yep.
Most people don't have any protection in place for one reason or another. You know, it might be that life insurance is thought of a death insurance, which is not a topic people want to talk about. Yep. And they don't want to talk about something happening to them, right? No, nobody ever wants to imagine that they have a disability, a severe accident or a sickness. So
those what ifs.
Yep. So Hunter, I guess the first question today for our listeners today is, why is risk management piece so critical to having a secure financial plan?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point, Mike. And I think to, I guess, sum it up in a short answer form, it kind of relates back to what you guys were talking about when it comes to the building of a financial house, if you will. So along this subject of the foundation planning pieces, I know you guys talked about the cash flow budget, and then now we're on the risk management pieces. If you don't have that solid foundation piece in place, all of the walls that you've worked so hard to build can just come tumbling over.
That's, yeah, exactly. You know, and yeah, for our listeners, people who haven't heard any of our previous podcasts, one of the things we're building on that Matt and I look at with our planning clients is really building a sound financial house. You know, you've got to start with a solid foundation, which is what Hunter was talking about today. Once you get the foundation in place, then you can put up the walls and eventually put the roof on the house, which is hopefully retirement or whatever that looks at. So Hunter was talking about the walls crumbling down because somebody doesn't have a piece of their foundation in place, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if one of your walls are connected to, for example, the breadwinner and their income, and you're using a portion of their income to put away towards retirement, and you no longer have that income anymore, well, where's that income going to come from?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how are they going to fund for their retirement? It's not going to come out of the ground. It's not going to grow on trees, right?
Exactly.
You got to have that surviving spouse still has to have that retirement piece in place. That's what they were both counting on, right?
Exactly, yes.
You know, Hunter, you lead me into the next question, which you brought up income protection.
Mm-hmm.
We found that many people don't have any protection in place to protect their income in the event something happens, an accident, a sickness. If you can just briefly describe to our listeners, why is it important to have your income protected?
Yeah, well, I guess kind of reverting back to what I had just kind of talked about was, what happens if that breadwinner can no longer bring in that income? I brought up the point of if they, God forbid, died, but what happens if they can't work for 8, 10, 12 months? I actually had a very close family friend had a stroke a couple of years back, and thank goodness both of the spouses worked, but they lost half of the income when that had happened, and that other spouse had taken up the, I wouldn't say burden, but the task of taking care of the spouse that had the stroke and had to take him to rehab and make sure that he was dropped off to the handicap bus to make sure he could get the proper rehab that he needed, and also on half of the income that they had before. So that's just one example, along with many others, that is a good reason that people need to protect their income.
What, you know, I think if you ask people today, what's their most important financial asset? I know other than their family, their kids.
Right.
What do you hear most people tell you when you ask them that question?
You know, that's a great point, Mike. And I ask that question very often. And the number one answer I get is their house.
Their house.
If they own a house.
Biggest financial obligation you're going to make in your lifetime, probably, right, is buying a home. Especially today's prices, right? Okay. $500,000?
In the market of Colorado, especially.
But how do they buy that house? That's what, yeah, it's their
income.
That's
right. It's potential earning income, right?
That's it.
You know, I think one of the things that probably drives home this issue today in this crazy 2020 calendar year,
right,
is take the people who have been laid off because of COVID-19, furloughed, without an income, trying to collect unemployment. Look how many people were frustrated and couldn't live anymore. Think about how short of a time period that was, that short window, 60, 90 days, and people were already struggling. You know, if you have a disability that lasts longer than 90 days, Matt, well, what are your options with the government?
Well, I've seen this happen. Social Security disability is pretty much your only government option.
Yeah.
And last time I checked, the odds of getting a claim on that are pretty insignificant. I think some 90% of claims are denied the first times.
And the reason, I think, is because Social Security's definition of what they determine to be able to pay a claim is built on you being able to do any occupation.
Any
JCC occupation, which you're suited for, right? Yeah, they could job place you anywhere, which is why a lot of Social Security claims get denied, or they could take a year to a year and a half to finally get approved. We have a friend, client?
Yes.
And friend of ours, right, Hunter, that we know?
Yes, we do.
How many times did she apply for disability with multiple sclerosis?
Oh, I couldn't.
4 or 5?
Yeah.
So she finally got approved. Took 2 years?
2 years.
So again, I think the people, I think one, and you may agree, that people don't want to ever picture themselves in that situation. And two, I don't think they really understand until it happens what that situation is going to be like. But there's no problem, in my opinion, that a lack of money doesn't make worse.
True statement.
Yeah. Very true.
If the person's disabled, not only do you have to care for that person, you become almost an automatic caregiver because it's your loved one. Now you got all the obligations, right?
Bill,
talk about that a little bit.
Care.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me, and relating back to what you mentioned about the whole COVID-19 pandemic that had happened, when it comes to the mortgages that people need to be paying, there were so many more foreclosures that started to happen because people were no longer working, and they couldn't pay their mortgage.
Right.
Now, that's relating to a job loss because they became unemployed, but the same principle relates to if somebody was disabled and they no longer have half of the income that they were living on to pay that mortgage. Where does that money come from?
Right.
Well, if they have their own disability income protection plan in place, then they would be able to replace a portion of their income and not have to worry as much.
And I know, Hunter, you're not married, you're single, but man, like, you know, as a married couple, you find that each of us,
you rely on both income.
You rely on both income, but you also rely on each other to do all the household duties. And now today, with your kids being partially home from school and doing the teaching thing at home and the hybrid thing, who knows how long that's going to last, right? I can't hope it doesn't last any longer, but, you know, cutting the lawn and just simple duties that you do every day, now that that other spouse, that single surviving spouse, has to do on their own, or they got to what?
Hire it out.
Pay somebody to do it, which is going to what?
Cost
more money. So your expenses actually go up when a disability happens, not down. And your income goes down. So that's a double-edged sword, right?
Exactly.
You know, Hunter, it's interesting. You know, this just seems surreal to me, but there's a product out there today that'll protect a person's income if they're disabled from a sickness or accident, on the job, off the job. But I heard it gives you 80% of your money back every 10 years. That sounds too good to be true.
How does that work?
You know, it does sound like it's too good to be true, but it's actually not, Mike. And what's really cool about that is I've actually had this question asked of me before. And the question was, what are the drawbacks of disability insurance? Well, I guess one drawback would be you don't go on claim for the entire time that you have a policy.
20, 30 years.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, you've paid all those premiums in, so you don't see the benefit come from it. Well, like you mentioned, you can get 80% of the total premiums that you've paid in back every 10 years.
Less any claims, right?
Less any claims, of course.
That's incredible.
So if you go on claim, you get that benefit that you've paid for. But if you don't go on claim for 10 years, then you can get 80% of what you had paid in. So
it's almost like a forced savings plan with the ability to protect your income if something unexpected happens.
Very true. Yeah.
It almost seems like it would be a no-brainer to buy disability income.
Yeah. Right? What does that have? Your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, your cake and eat it too. I mean, that's really incredible. We'll get into more detail with that in our podcast regarding disability income protection and long-term care, which we'll talk about at a future podcast. So, Matt, you had a couple of questions regarding life insurance for Hunter that you want to address. You want to touch base on those?
I think life insurance is probably the other, if you had to pick two pieces of the foundation planning, especially for younger people starting families and starting their careers. But I've heard this a lot, Hunter. There's so many options between term insurance and permanent insurance, and you hear all kinds of ads for buy term life insurance, lifequotes.com, but there's more, you know, there's a lot more that goes into it, right, than just term. Do I buy term insurance and what's the cheapest, right?
Right. There's a lot of things that go into the purchase of life insurance. You ask a great question. And relating back to the conversation that Mike and I had about the income piece when it comes to spouses, families, what is that loss of income going to have an effect on that entire family? If, for example, the breadwinner, God forbid, passes prematurely, say 40 years old, middle of their working life, they pass away, and they're the sole income owner in that household, how do they pay their bills? Well, that life insurance will act as a bridge to be able to help pay that income. Of course, it would be a lump sum payment to the wife or the spouse beneficiary of that life insurance policy, but they can use that throughout the rest of what they would have as working years with their deceased spouse to fill that gap of income and help pay bills, help pay the mortgage, whatever that may be.
So there's a lot that comes into it, and I've heard this phrase, the human life value, and I think that's probably what you're talking to. Is how it's more than just, okay, I've got a $200,000 mortgage. If I get $200,000 life insurance, I'll be fine, right? It's actually, okay, where are we funding? Is it college for the kids? Is it my retirement? Is it, like Mike, you talked about hiring help. You know, a lot of families rely on on two parents these days. So there's an equation. Is that hard to figure out, or is that something that you walk people through? How does that work?
Yeah, it's actually surprisingly not as hard of an equation as you would think it would be when it comes to determining the amount of life insurance you need. So relating back to what you mentioned, the term versus maybe a permanent life insurance policy, what makes the most sense for everybody's different situation? Well, that just depends on a couple of different factors. How long do they need the life insurance? What do they need it for? For example, one would be paying off the liabilities that they have, their mortgage, any debts that they have outstanding.
Sure.
Replacing income for a portion of time, say 10 years for the spouse. And what does that look like? Having enough within a life insurance plan to pay for final expenses. Granted, not a lot compared to maybe the liability side. And then any extra that they want to have out there for educational purposes, college funding for their children. So it's
a lot of pieces to think about.
Yeah, a lot of pieces definitely to think about. And another piece is pre-funding a retirement plan.
You mentioned that earlier, you lose that and you lose that retirement plan, but that surviving spouse was still counting on that $500,000 or $1 million of retirement that person was going to need. And, you know, today there's employees still in Denver with para, you know, we've got a very large para population here in Denver, working population. We got people working in Lockheed Martin who still have defined benefit pension plans. Well, if that person dies prematurely, their hours are gone. And their defined benefit pension plan is going to be reduced severely, too, on that premature death.
That's a very good point.
And then you look at Social Security. We talked about Social Security on the disability side, Social Security on the life insurance side. If your kids are 19 years old and your spouse dies, their surviving spouse isn't going to get Social Security survivor benefits.
No.
There's a blackout period between that child reaching, the youngest child reaching age 19 and age 60. They're not going to be able to draw survivor benefits till they're age 60. And I think people, would you both agree that people undervalue their human life value?
Oh, definitely.
People think $250,000 is enough life insurance today. That person making $60,000 a year net after taxes.
Yes.
And has got 15 years to work is over $1 million of income.
And a lot of people don't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Very good stuff, you know. So I think we all agree that insurance is, I think this is probably one of the reasons I think people maybe don't act on insurance as much. One, because I think it's a little bit confusing. You know, there's a lot of different aspects, maybe daunting to take on that task. Two,
the what ifs.
I don't think people want to ever realize. I've had people tell me, yeah, if I buy insurance, that just means something's going to happen to me.
Yeah.
And you can't think that way, right? The realistic piece is it's probably more than likely not, right? The law of averages are in your favor still, that you're probably not going to have a premature death or an accident, but you never know. You know, I was just telling you guys this morning before we got on the podcast, I lost two good people, young people, this weekend, both to accidents.
Unexpected.
Unexpected. A past client, no longer a client, just found out that she passed away from a fall, and another workout partner of mine at our gym, who was 42 years old, from a bicycle accident. You don't know. I think the moral is that, you know, it's better to be prepared than not prepared.
Yeah.
And you either prepare or you repair. The problem in the risk management side, if something happens to you.
Too late
to repair.
Yeah.
You're not going to go back and change things, right?
Yeah.
Great. Hunter, Jeff, anything you want to wrap up with? Anything you want to close with?
No, I think we touched on quite a bit. There are a lot of questions that people can have when it comes to insurance planning, risk management planning, and I can fully understand that. When I first got into the business, my head was spinning at 100 miles an hour,
right?
And I just had to slow down, take a step back, and try and bring that train to closer to 40.
Let me ask you one more quick question before we wrap up.
Yeah.
Being that you've been in the business this short period of time, and your total methodology of thinking has changed from when you started in the business to today.
Right.
Is this an important piece of why people should reach out to a trusted advisor on this aspect of risk management, because it is so daunting as opposed to trying to do it yourself or do it online?
Oh, 100%. This is a huge piece. And I've seen there's a lot of people out there that work in insurance and they understand it very well, rather than going online and getting a quote off of the internet. It
sounds like tiling your bathroom, get taking a Home Depot tile class, right?
Exactly.
You screw it up, you can do it over. You screw this up, you could mess with your whole
very
financial life.
Checks.
Right. Well, you know, Hunter, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for engaging us in a very short podcast on the risk management side.
I appreciate you guys inviting me in.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Video.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah.
To our listeners out there who are either first joining us or have joined us before, as I mentioned, we're going to dig deeper into each one of these aspects of risk management, including the home and auto insurance. We'll touch briefly on that with a guest speaker we're going to have the proper liability coverages and coverages for your home and auto insurance. But hopefully you got the
gist of it.
The gist of why it's important to have this protection and not try to procrastinate with it, right? So stay tuned. We're going to have our podcast coming up on disability long-term care, the life insurance itself, the difference between term and permanent insurance. What's the best for you? Could it be term, permanent, or a combination of both? And then also the property and casualty. And then our last podcast, which will be coming up down the road, will be the estate planning piece, which will be joined by our guest speaker, Raquel Young. She's an estate planning attorney here in Golden. So thank you for your time today for listening in. We love to have your questions. If you want to reach out to us, connect with us online at goldenwealthsolutions.com. Reach out to Matt, myself, or Hunter, and we can help you with your planning and help you move forward so that you have your family protection in place. Have a great day.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Osaic Wealth Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Osaic Wealth is separately owned and other entities and or marketing names, products, or services referenced here are independent of Osaic Wealth.
Learn more at goldenwealthsolutions.com.